the emotion is stronger than anything else. It's this big looming thing that we've given more importance. And so we have to somehow change the importance of that. And all of this relates to you living for yourself, which means taking action in a way that aligns with who you truly are as an individual so that you're more fulfilled and build an environment that you can care about.
The Happy Healthy Human podcast will help you build your happy, healthy life. Your host, Paul Levitin, is a board-licensed health and wellness coach, nutrition coach, personal trainer, and behavior change specialist with over 10 years of experience helping people create positive life change. Each week, he discusses topics that will help you understand yourself, why you do the things you do, and how to take steps to create the life of your dreams. He talks with experts from therapists to addictions counselors, coaches, trainers, CEOs, financial planners, and more. If you've ever wondered how can you become the best, happiest, healthiest version of yourself, you've come to the right place.
Dr. Benjamin Ritter is an international leadership and career coach, a senior talent management consultant, a top career development voice on LinkedIn, international speaker, the founder of Live For Yourself Consulting, as well as the host of the Executive Podcast and the Live For Yourself Revolution Podcast. Ben's mission is to guide and empower leaders toward becoming the leader of their own careers and create a career they can love. In this episode, Ben and I take a deep dive into understanding and living according to personal values. We unpack the concept of aligning actions with core values to lead a fulfilled life, both professionally and personally. Ben is an all-around awesome human who I've had the pleasure of becoming friends with since recording this episode, so I am so thrilled for you to get to hear this conversation with Dr. Ben Ritter.
What does it mean to live life for yourself?
You're just throwing out the heavy hitters right away, Paul. Living for yourself. A lot of times I'll get people kind of taken aback from that name and title and phrase. They tend to think that it's selfish. And most of the clients I work with actually have this limiting belief that they're not allowed to live for themselves, that they're actually living for the validation and permission of others. They're so concerned about what people think about them, they end up actually building some resentment and anger and frustration towards life and to the people that they're living around, and also don't actually set any boundaries for pretty much their closest relationships, which ends up ultimately causing conflict and leading to the destruction of those relationships. They do the same for their work. And so living for yourself actually means understanding who you are, what you deem as most important, and then holding yourself accountable to create an environment that honors that. It doesn't mean stepping on other people's toes or ignoring the fact that they're all humans and deserve respect. But it leads with respecting yourself and honoring yourself and accepting accountability for the world that you live each and every single day.
You mentioned some people have limiting beliefs. And in my experience, this comes a lot from the stories that are in our head. But the stories that are in our head come from either others, other places, but often from past experiences. It's this way because it's always been this way. And if it's always been this way, then it's always going to be this way. So how do you help people, or what do you say to people who have been like, yeah, like it is like that because that's been my story up until this point. That's why I have those limiting beliefs.
Beliefs don't hold up very well in the face of values. And when you're able to share your beliefs out loud, in a very safe space, say a coaching relationship, and even just to speak them out loud, or to write them down and to really look at them. And then on the other side, you have the things that you hold most important, how you want to define yourself or how you've defined yourself. And by the way, values tend to lead to goals, because when we feel like when we know what's most important, we tend to figure out what we want to alter in our life or work towards in our life. And the goal isn't as important as the value that you get from working towards that specific value. So the goal can change, but the value can stay the same. Now, then you have these beliefs that are threatening that progress and you showing up exactly as you want to be or how you believe is important. So then all of a sudden now you have other things that are questioning your beliefs that are pretty strong. And so, for example, something simple. I work with a lot of people that are trying to grow in their career. I can't tell my boss that. I can't share the fact that I'm unhappy. Well, solution-oriented. I can't share the fact that I want to work on this type of work, or that I want a promotion, or that I want a raise, or I want to do something differently than what I'm doing, because there's a certain hierarchical structure that we have to follow. I have to lead. I have to be led, basically, instead of I have to lead. And if you question that belief out loud, you say, okay, so am I doing anything wrong by talking and having a conversation with my boss? You ask yourself, well, what is important about that conversation? Well, you have a value for being honest and being truthful, or you have a value for being achievement-oriented, or you have a value for novelty and adventure, whatever that is. And so that you realize your belief actually is not really a belief, but an excuse or a reason that your body has created over time to keep you safe. And when you realize that you don't have to be safe anymore, because you know it's important, you know what you're working towards, and anything that happens in between you reaching that goal isn't as important because it's just a learning experience, that belief stops being a belief, starts being an excuse. And you realize that, oh, this thing that I thought was a shackle is like styrofoam, or, you know, it's something that isn't very strong anymore.
Something that you bring up there that is interesting, and I think that this, it goes beyond everything and kind of cuts a little bit deeper when you just investigate a thought. A lot of thoughts don't hold up to the light once you bring them there. Like you said, I can't do X, Y, and Z. I'm not cut out for A, B, and C. I'm too this. I'm too that. I'm too old. I'm too young. I'm too whatever. We have these limiting beliefs and these thoughts, but is that true? Is that actually the case, or is that just a feeling, just a thought? And, you know, usually when we dig a little bit deeper, I mean, this is what a therapist will do. This is what a coach will do. They just help you dig into these things a little bit. And we start to see that they really unravel logically. But in those moments, the reason that that doesn't happen is because we're not thinking logically. We're usually thinking emotionally. And that's what logically, I know that just speaking to my boss isn't going to be the end of the world and something good might come out of it, but it feels scary. So how do you help people start to get past that fear, that emotion that's holding them back, when clearly the logical step is to go forward, but fear is keeping them stuck?
Well, you can change the emotion, or you can say F the emotion and do it anyways. And it depends on where you are at as an individual. And I say, don't do the deep work unless you have to. And so if you're geared up and motivated to take the action, like if you're motivated to go to the gym, but you feel uncomfortable going to the gym, but you have a trainer, you've invested in it, you're now going to go, no matter what, you're going to show up, then great. We don't have to do the deep work of that you lack confidence and you have body, you know, image issues, and your dad like made you feel uncomfortable in gyms because of something. Like, so like, you don't have to go into that level of detail if you're able to take the action. Now, if you find that you're not able to take the action, that's when we have to go, okay, so what's going on here? What is actually holding you back? Because logically, this is a really simple thing. And so you have them admit this is a really simple thing. You walk them through the logical steps and you realize that there's emotions that are holding them back. Pre-programming that's holding them back. So great, you start investigating the programming. I love what you said about like the emotion, you kind of hinted at, the emotion is stronger than anything else. It's this big looming thing that we've given more importance. And so we have to somehow change the importance of that. And you can do that in a variety of ways. You can do that through visualization techniques. You can do that through reframing. You can do that through deconstruction. You can do that through visiting the past and understanding it. You can do it through making the emotion more important for the thing you want to accomplish. So there's a variety of ways that you can do it. Now, if you're wondering, Ben, I don't care about all the ways. I want just something that I can do for myself. Okay, so let's talk about something real quick. Simple visualization exercise you can do. Usually when we're afraid of something or something has a very high level of hold on us, we have a high level of anxiety or stress from it, we can't take action on something, it's because we've made the thing in our mind really big. And so if you think about this thing, like say, for example, let's think about a past relationship. I mean, we're kind of jumping all over relationships, working out and work and stuff, but you'll see a lot of this stuff's interrelated, which is why it's important to understand this specifically. So past relationship, a lot of times people can't think during their day because they're thinking about the person that was maybe in their past that isn't responding to them and they're not with anymore. If you think about that person, they're very large, they're magnified. The image that you see is huge, it's colorful, it's vivid. You can almost see it in motion, like a video. And that is a good representation that this thing in your mind has a hold on you. The ability to see something in almost reality in your mind highlights the emotional connection it has with you. It's very important. But you can change that. And so you can sit back, you can close your eyes, you can take a couple deep breaths, and all of a sudden, you take that image that if let's say it's a video, and you pause it, just hit pause. Great. Realize that you have control over your thoughts, your feelings. And then you can wipe the color out of it, make it black and white. Then you can pixelate it, almost as if the video is getting eaten up by something, being exposed to something that is decomposing it. Then you can minimize it. You can crumple it up. You can throw it in a trash can. You can light it on fire. You can walk away. Then you can put it in a box and blow up the box. And then you can choose to actually walk away from that image in your mind. And we can do these things, these little mental exercises, until we realize that we do have control over our thoughts. We can interrupt them. We can minimize the emotional hold on something by taking away its vividness. And just try that out. And I promise you, you'll see that, okay, so maybe I feel a bit better. It's the same reason why going to sleep and waking up the next day, the emotions, the thoughts, the stressors that you had are very different. Because you're processing them instead of focusing on them and creating this negative cycle.
There's a lot that you said there that I kind of want to dig into a little bit more. But one thing I like that I think is a little bit maybe even contrarian to the way a lot of people teach this stuff, which is what you just said in the beginning, which is kind of like, if you don't need to do the deep work, then don't do it. If you have the capacity to get the job done without having to do all of the hardest things and like really get into the rough of it, then, you know, take that path. And that's something I'm very cognizant of and a big proponent of too, is like, I used to be all about like, you got to do the hard thing, right? You got to push, you got to grind, which is true to some extent. But I'm also, to your point, like sometimes it's about taking the easy way, taking the easy wins, because life is already hard enough and life is always going to throw curveballs at us. So it's like, if we can take a win, you can take it, you know, it will usually help. So I'm wondering if you have like any like examples of times when you were working with a client maybe, and they were like trying to beat themselves in the head, making things harder than it had to be. And actually by making it easier on themselves, they were able to see more progress.
If your goal is strong enough and you're committed to achieve that goal, like people think they're committed to things. I have a goal. I'm working towards this thing. Well, if you're not working towards it, you're actually not committed to it. It's very straightforward. If you are committed to something, that means that no matter what happens, you're going to do the thing. I'm not going to eat chips. Okay, if you eat chips, you're not committed to the goal. And so what you have to do is every time you eat chips, you have to recommit to the goal. And then you have to figure out what did I do different? What didn't I do because I couldn't commit. And then you have to try to fix it. And that's what commitment is. So if you really care about your goal, a lot of times you just need to know what's holding you back, and then you're more likely to take action on it. So for example, I work with a leader who got some feedback that people didn't like him very much. And when we got down to the nitty-gritty, he just didn't realize he wasn't making any sort of human connection. He grew up with work being the thing you did to make money. You did it, you worked hard, you moved up in an organization, that was it. And no one ever told him, hey, it's really important to ask how someone's doing. To sit them down, have a one-on-one. Here's a list of 3 or 4 questions you can ask them to build a relationship. And he go, great. And he went and did that. And you know what? He got promoted. He became the managing director of his practice and people started liking him. He just needed to know what to do. Same thing with people that are looking to apply for jobs. You see this very often in career development. Someone disqualifies themselves from positions. So they read a job posting. They read the description and they go, that's not me. So they don't apply. And so lo and behold, 10 hours later, and the person's applied to one job. And you go to them and you say, hey, you want to go work in sales enablement as a global director? You see a position titled Director of Sales Enablement, you apply to it. As long as it doesn't need to meet any other criteria. They go, oh, really? I can do that? Yeah, you can do that. Awesome. And they're off to the races. And so sometimes when you just learn what you can do, that challenges a belief that really is like nonsensical, like a one-page resume. If this myth continues to exist in the world, I'm gonna like flip out, because you're unbelievably limiting yourself when it comes to scanners or recruiters. And the fact that it's electronic, you don't have to print anything out and hand it to anyone anymore. So no one's gonna, that's the whole reason why they wanted one-page resumes in the first place. So these are the types of examples where if you just learn something, it can change your behavior.
I like, you know, I like that you brought it back around to, you know, career development, because I know that that's what you do. But you also mentioned before, right, we had talked about weight loss and then relationships and all these things. And I actually appreciate that. There's something that, you know, people who listen to this show know that I say all the time, which is everything is the same. Right? Success is success is success. Success in fitness is success in relationships, is success in business, is success in health. And the things that we need to do in one area are usually the things that we need to do in another area. And that's really why my goal with this podcast and just with everything I do is like finding those common threads of success. Like, what are these common markers that we see across all areas? So I'm curious if there's anything that you've noticed. That you work with a lot of top performers and a lot of what I would consider to be elite individuals, right? So is there any common two or three threads of success that you see across all industries and areas?
So there's a structure called the three C's of self-leadership that I work with clients on, and it's pretty relevant to all areas. If you are having a hard time, getting stuck, finding that you can't actually take action towards something, you feel unfulfilled in any area of your life, focus on these three specific pillars. The first pillar is clarity. You need to know what you stand for. We talked about in the beginning, if you know your values, a lot of things get easier. If you know what's really important to you, what you care about, what gets you motivated, what excites you, you ultimately will be able to show up in a way that you've never been able to show up before in the past. And when you know your values, and we can talk about how to figure those out, how to explore, define, and align them in your life, you're able then to create goals that matter. And if you can create goals that matter, you'll be more motivated to actually work towards them. And you'll also realize at the same time that achieving the goal doesn't matter as much as living true to your values. So let's say, for example, you lose a job and your goal was to become a senior director at that job. Well, you figure out what was important about becoming a senior director at that job, or hitting a certain weight, or dating a specific type of person. Well, especially in dating, if one person decides that you're not a good fit for them, there's a lot of other people that you can go date. And if you know your values, you're able probably to get an even better match, because now you have more experience from the previous relationship. So you figure out your values, and then you can create goals from those values, and that can become daily tasks. So now all of a sudden, you know what you need to do, you know what you want to do, you know how to do it, you know when you want to do it by, and you have a little bit more control and clarity over your life. That in itself builds confidence, and I've hinted at the next two C's, so that when you can focus now on building more confidence in your life, you're more likely then to also take action. And all of this relates to you living for yourself, which means taking action in a way that aligns with who you truly are as an individual, so that you're more fulfilled and build an environment that you can care about. So confidence is two main things. It's your skills. So these are things you go learn. So for example, you're trying to get a new job. Do you know how to use LinkedIn? Do you have a LinkedIn profile? Do you know how to build a resume? You're dating, do you know how to hold a conversation? Do you know general boundaries when it comes to dealing with individuals? Working out, do you know a safe way to actually build muscle? I remember having a conversation with some individuals from another country that were part of my family, and we're talking about sugar. They're like, sugar is great. Sugar's energy. Sugar's what you need to survive and move about your day. Like, kind of, but doesn't mean you should just eat a scoop of sugar like you just did, depending on what your your goals are. So then there's just the knowledge and skills from it. And then also confidence is mental. So your beliefs in yourself. So it's self-efficacy and self-esteem. So what are your skills? And do you truly believe that you can accomplish what you care about? Those two are very important. If you can focus on that, and you're looking at dating, it's, do you put people on a pedestal? Or do you put yourself on a pedestal? When you go to the gym, do you feel like you're comfortable going to a gym? And no matter what state or stage you are or how you look, and being able to take a step forward and be confident in yourself in that regard. And then the third step is control. And control is, are you able to show up intentionally and commit to what you care about each and every single day and stay true to that? That means you may have to take a hard look at your relationships, people that you surround yourself with. You may take a hard look at the city you live in. You may have to take a hard look at your roommates or your partner, your relationships. Where are you spending your money? Where are you spending your time, and who are you spending it with? That is going to be very critical to you becoming successful and taking action and building a life that you care about. And those three C's apply to every single aspect of our life. And ultimately, it helps us be more aligned to who we truly are, again, and be committed to what we want to achieve.
I really appreciate you breaking that down so thoroughly. And I, you know, again, it's funny, I come back to everything is the same, and we, everyone has their own kind of route, but I have a very similar framework that I've used, and it all hinges on the same thing. Because again, if you dig down deep enough, you start to see like, these are the things that matter. Control is a huge part. Clarity, like you don't know where you're going if you don't know where you're going. You can't end up at a destination you didn't set out for. No one accidentally stumbles upon success. But the underpinning of all of that, I really think, is the values, as you've stated already from the beginning. It's like kind of like that seems like what everything else is built on top of. And yet I would think that if I asked 100 people right now, what are your values that you hold deepest, 90 of them wouldn't know, and 9 of them would make something up on the spot, even though they've never thought about it before. And 1 person might have considered even what this is. So do you have like a technique, a something you take people through right in the beginning to start to narrow down what your actual values are if they've never even put thought into it?
You'd be surprised. Not everyone wants to know their values. Not everyone needs to know their values. Talk about that deep work piece. I would love for every single person to figure out their values and align them into their life. That would make me so, so very happy. And if you're someone listening that's interested in exploring your values, and get a pen or paper, and you're going to get a quick exercise that you can do for yourself. A lot of values assessments online focus on like multiple choice questions, and then, you know, loop you into kind of a bucket with some vague terminology that can be helpful, but I like to take more of a personal stance to it. So your values are embedded in your memories. Your values are embedded in how you define yourself. And very often people will choose values that actually aren't values. Like, for example, financial wealth is not exactly a value. So pick values that you can control. So you can work hard and try to earn money, yeah, but what is it that actually leads to greater financial wealth? Or what do you want financial wealth for? Safety, novelty, adventure. Like there's components of having wealth that you are trying to, that will, like, it will lead to other things. So try to get to the core value of what you truly care about. Wealth is a tool to live true to a value. Very often I work with high achievers, and that tends to something we just tend to have to break down initially. So you want to list out your 5 happiest memories. So you want to sit back. And by the way, it's funny. A lot of times today, we're talking about taking a step back from doing your work, living your life, and thinking and reflecting and writing and just really trying to understand more than just doing. A lot of living for yourself, a lot of fulfillment, a lot of clarity, a lot of confidence comes from getting out of the muck of our day-to-day and really just spending a little bit more time on answering the questions that are causing us pain, that we're just trying to just ignore or we're feeling and not doing anything about. So you have to make time for this. So I'm going to pause because I'm going to go into the exercise, but I just want to see if you have any other comments.
Well, no, I'm interested to hear what the breakdown of this exercise, but that's exactly the case, right? It's like, again, everything is the same. Sit in silence, right? This is why meditation is so big. It's just like, can you chill? Can you not be getting beaten down by the constant barrage of life and work and family stress and this? And like, can you take a breath? And that's why I think what's frustrating for people, it's like, I'm in the ocean getting pummeled by the current, and like, you're telling me to swim. And it's like, yes, I understand that theoretically, but how do I actually get my head above water? But we overcomplicate it so much. And like, as you said, it's just like, we have to just give ourselves the space. None of this stuff happens by accident. So like, you know, for people listening, something like this, like an activity of figuring out your values, and as you said, Ben, grabbing a piece of paper and actually grabbing a pen to actually do this activity, not just listen to it right now as they listen to the podcast, but actually do the thing that you're saying. It's like people will be like, because I know myself, I listen to podcasts all the time, but they'll be like, well, sit and do this breathing exercise. And I'll just listen to it, but I won't actually do it because I'm riding my bike or I'm working or I'm like doing 18 other things while I'm listening to the podcast. So I think just being able to settle for a second and sit is a skill that sadly that we've lost, and something that I'm very keen on working on myself and for everyone listening. So I appreciate you pausing at that.
I made a commitment to myself that when I read a book and it asks me to do an exercise, that I actually do the exercise. Because what's the point of reading it? I know as a coach, you know as a coach, I see you nodding, that it matters. It matters to write down the answers to the questions. It matters to sit back and to reflect on them and to process them. And I don't know about you, but I'll sit and have a coaching conversation with myself sometimes. I'll close my eyes, lay in bed, and I'll start talking about something and I'll respond back. And there are parts of you that will respond back if you listen hard enough, and you will be able to work through things that you didn't know that you could work through just by taking this time. Okay, you ready for the exercise? Okay, so the different parts of it, this is exploring your values. And so to explore them, I like to look at your memories. And so what you want to do first is explore times at your work and life where you were incredibly happy, proud, or felt accomplished. So what were you doing? Get specific. So include where you were, who you were with, what you were doing, any sort of details that you can come up with. The more detailed, the better. You want to come up with maybe 3 to 5 different times in your life where you were the happiest. So write those out. As you write them out, you may see some themes. You may not. Try to do some personal, try to do some professional. If no personal come up or no professional come up, all of a sudden now it's hinting that something's missing. And between these themes also hint at something that you want to pay attention to. So next, you want to look at 3 to 5 times in your personal life or at work where you're unhappy and dissatisfied. So you're angry, disappointed, stressed. These are moments you probably don't want to spend too much time thinking about, but we're going to right now. So also include where you were, who you were with, what was happening in your life. The more detailed you can get, the better. You may notice that there's a lot in your professional life or maybe a lot in your personal life. All in all, you'll notice some themes as well. So then you want to reflect on the positive and the negative and see, well, what are the themes or similarities between these memories in my life? What tended to cause happiness? What tended to cause negativity or unhappiness or stress? And as you identify those themes, you'll get closer to your values. And so write down any insights that you have from exploring those memories. Now, after this activity, it's a great opportunity to say what's most important about who you are in your personal life and at work. So you can write phrases, you can write sentences, you can capture pictures, you can write keywords, whatever it is you want to actually get to the core of the themes here. So we're still just collating information. And so maybe this took about 20 to 30 minutes, maybe a little bit more. You have a lot of words, phrases, statements, pictures of who you are. I want you to take a step back now. Go do something else. Go listen to an episode of this podcast. Go write a review on iTunes for the Happy, Healthy, and Human podcast. 5 stars. You're having a bunch of fun right now. And so then you come back and you look at what you wrote and you say, okay, so can I distill this down to single words? Can I figure out a word that represents my values that I feel is important, that lights me up, that gets me excited, that I think stands for who I am? Like, for example, my number one value is health. You may write down community. You might write down presence. You may write down learning. You might write down trust. You might write down novelty, adventure, curiosity, courage, whatever you feel, love, passion, whatever you feel is important, stands out from your memories. Now, you've kind of distilled these values down to terms. The single words, maybe you can also use sometimes phrases, that's helpful. But now we need to expand them again, because defining this value for your work or for your life or for your relationships will be different. So this is not an easy exercise, everyone. Take some time. So then you define this value for your work environment. If you're focused on your work environment, you can define it for your personal life. If you're working on your personal life, you can define it for your relationships. If you're working on finding a person that is a better fit, or a friend, or trying to figure out your community. And as you define these values, you'll learn more about them. No worries, this is something you can keep coming back to. Well, let's say now you have your value term, you have the definition. Now look at them and say, well, how would I rank these? And by the way, you should have probably about 10 right now. Really what we care about is a list of kind of the top 3 to 5. It's difficult to remember anything over that anyways. So then you look at your value and you go, okay, so if I had health, would I be okay sacrificing intelligence? If I had intelligence, would I be okay sacrificing courage? And you go down the list like this and you figure out a general prioritization or ranking for your values. Some people think that they can have different rankings for their work and for their life and for their relationships. I'm of the opinion that you have the same ranking throughout. You just might define them a little differently. Just do what's best for you. There's no right way or wrong way to do this. You really just want to figure out what aligns most with who you are and how you want to live your life, relationships, and your work. So after you have your values, how you find them, you prioritize them, look at your top 3 to top 5, and then you can rank then different parts of your life. You can rank your job. How much does it align to each value? You can rank your relationships. How much do these people align with your values? You can rank yourself. How much are you living a life that is aligned to your values? And then based on that score, you can then start asking yourself some questions. Well, how can I live more aligned to my value of health? What can I do to improve it? How can I live more aligned to my value of honesty? And so then you can actually create some action steps, and then all of a sudden these become goals, and now you are truly on the way to living for yourself.
One, I appreciate that thorough breakdown. And yeah, anyone listening, I mean, rewind this, listen to that a few times, because that is a masterclass in actually figuring yourself out. But something that it brings up for me is, like, I'm curious how you feel about this. Are values, or can they be, aspirational? And when I say that, what I mean is, what if I'm the person who says health is my value? I value health above all else, but my reality doesn't match that, meaning the actions that I've been taking the last 5 years are not valuing health. Is that to mean that I actually don't value health? Because that's how I would look at it. I'd be like, well, clearly you don't value health that much if you're saying you value health, but every night you're eating McDonald's and you're going out drinking instead of going out to exercise. Like, you're saying one thing and you're doing another. So clearly that's not your highest value. Or is that I'm living in a discrepancy with my values, because my value is health, but I'm acting against it. And that's where a lot of our discontent comes from. And by aligning that, my actions with my values, I would be in better alignment.
Yeah. And so you first have to ask yourself, do I have these aspirational values because of pressure? Or do I have these aspirational values because this is what I care about? I work with individuals that say, I want health to be my number one value. And I go, great, why? Tell me, like, what's so important about it to you? What do you want from it? And sometimes you find out that it's not their number one value. They think it should be. So they have expectations for themselves that actually aren't real, based in reality. So you're not going to be able to keep committed to it. Now, let's say, though, that it is that, yes, health is my number one value, but I've been living a life unfulfilled where I feel stuck, and I am completely negative. I have no self-confidence, and it's impacted my relationships, whatever. There's dissonance. Then it would make sense that you're not living in alignment with your values, and this would be your value, which is would explain all the feelings that you have, all the negativity that you feel towards yourself. So values can be aspirational if they actually are your values.
Yeah, expectations and that question of why, where did that thought come from, I think is such a powerful one. I think so much of what we do is because we quote unquote should, or so much of how we build our lives is just because it was what we were told. It's what my dad said. It's what my teacher said. It's what my uncle, my aunt, whoever said, that this is how life is supposed to be, or this is what success looks like, or you know, this is what you're supposed to aspire to. And it's like we have these, again, stories and beliefs in our heads. And just simply, as you said before, slowing down and taking ourselves out of it for a second, but asking, okay, is that real? Where did that come from? Is such a powerful tool. And I think that, you know, people would do themselves a lot of service to, again, be a little bit more inquisitive into their own thoughts and their own actions and just kind of the why behind the what. Like, well, why is that the case? So I really appreciate you bringing that. And the last question that I have for you, Ben, is the same question that I ask every guest, which is simply, if you had one action step to start giving listeners a happier, healthier life, an action that they could take right now today, as soon as this podcast ends, what would that be?
There is so many. There's so many. Okay. I will pick one that is most important to me. Now, when I was younger, I wanted to be a professional soccer player. It became my everything. I mistakenly said it was my purpose. And whenever someone says the word purpose, they should be given an instruction manual, because we are told this word without any sort of context. It's pretty terrible. It leads to some destructive habits. And so I labeled this purpose as more important than me. People do this for relationships. They do this for goals. They do this for their, and you see this with people in their, as entrepreneurs a lot. But that is a really mistaken way to think about your purpose. So the one piece of advice I would give is to remember that anything that you can create. So for example, I created my purpose. I gave it meaning. I dedicated my time and my life to it. Anything that you can create is not more important than you. You are the creator of your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions, your purpose, your values. And so you always have to remember that anything that you're striving for or hold dear is just something that you've chosen. And that means that it's not more important than your health and your well-being, and also for sure how you think about yourself.
Really powerful. I appreciate that. And that's a new one that I haven't heard, but that hit me. Anything that you created yourself cannot be more important or greater than yourself, and kind of goes right back to where we started with the, you know, living for yourself and being a little bit more selfless, and, you know, putting kind of pouring into your own cup isn't selfish. It's actually helpful to everyone, because a better you is better for everyone. The last thing, Ben, is just simply, I'm going to have links for everything that you're doing in your show, in the show notes, for anyone listening who wants to learn from Ben a little bit more. His website, his social media are all there. But if someone wants to connect with you or talk to you directly, what's the best way for them to reach out, or where should they find you on the internet?
And for sure, check out liveforyourselfconsulting.com and just browse that site. You can also download your free guide to creating a fulfilling career. So that's out there. I will also add you to our email list, where you get monthly updates from me, as well as just little tidbits and add a little bit more for yourself. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn, Dr. Benjamin Ritter. I post content pretty regularly, and pretty excited that I recently got voted the top voice in career development coaching. So someone thinks that I have good things to say. So take a look, connect, send me a message, let me know you heard me here, and hopefully you can get some value from my content.
Awesome, Ben. Thank you so much for being here. I really enjoyed this.
That's all for this week. Be sure to subscribe and follow the show so you don't miss a beat. Support the show by sending this episode to a friend or leaving a rating and review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Stay happy, stay healthy.